Here's to capybaras everywhere.
Everywhere?
Everywhere.
Mark, why is the capybara make friends with all the other animals?
In order for it not to be eaten.
That's a good idea.
Not yet. Thank you.
And that's a collective
Ukrainian waitress. Wave at us, collective us.
Well, so there's
a lot of solidarity here for the Ukrainian.
A lot of solidarity, including physically housing and hiring Ukrainians.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing.
But that article I read this morning in the Irish Times about the guy who came in Dublin as a Ukrainian
photographer.
Yeah, he's a Ukrainian Jew, escaping persecution, presumably, comes to Ireland and spends a career, 50 years. They said his work ethic was off the chain, 365 days a year. He was outside on this specific bridge.
Where?
End Street in Dublin.
Dublin. Oh, I want to see those pictures.
I'll verify that that's... And he took these photographs. It was a street photographer in the years before people had cameras, and then kept with it when people had cameras.
That's what he did.
All the negatives he had were destroyed, apparently, and all that exists are the photographs he took that are in people's family albums.
I want to see that. I would love to see that.
I'd love to see it as a slice of history of Ireland.
That's what happened. And maybe this project was started because of the relationship with Ukraine. There's an affinity. So he's known all across Ireland for having taken these photographs, and he's in the family photo albums. You know, you go to this place and he would take pictures, and you're in the family photo album all across Ireland.
Wow.
So they had a project and collected over 6,000 photographs people sent in for this project, scans of their photographs.
Over decades. Wow.
Yeah, 50 years.
Wow. Wow.
Love that. Love it.
Great story.
And perhaps, if I had to guess, there's also affinity for the Irish with Ukrainians, because they don't like aggressors. They don't like the...
Right.
They're a David and Goliath story. They don't like the big guy picking up the little guy.
Right. That's so interesting.
That would resonate, wouldn't it?
I would imagine. I'm guessing.
That's probably a good guess.
It's a guess. Educated guess.
The idea was Ireland wanted to be independent from its big overlord country, which was England. And then it looked still over the years to England for jobs or for things not being provided in Ireland. And then it also looked to the West. It looked to the United States.
Are we discussing?
I was just asking.
Fintan O'Toole's book?
That's what I was just going to ask. If you're...
This is Fintan O'Toole. It certainly makes me ponder that because after reading that book, which you've read how many times? Four times? You've listened to it? I've read it once and then read the book, We Don't Know Ourselves. And just the relationship with England was fascinating to me to think, England has been many things, you know, for Ireland, including, obviously, you know, the troubles, you know, the fact that England has a toehold in Protestant England, has a toehold in Ireland, and will always, you know, with Northern Ireland. And I learned a lot reading his incredible book. It's fucking incredible.
Is there a section of the book or one idea that speaks to you the most? Like, what hit you?
I mean, the England thing I thought was really interesting because, like, we've already heard from someone, you know, who talked about, like England is a place where people went for jobs. I always kind of thought it was like think of it as an adversary, but, you know, Fintan O'Toole talks about cognitive dissonance at the beginning of the book, and like how cognitive dissonance exists all over the place. People just learn to accept that we're going to have two realities.
So you're saying once Ireland became independent of England, it's still dependent
in their orbit.
People are going there for jobs. People go there for abortions. I mean, before abortion was legal here, you just went to England.
But you didn't discuss
it. Talk about it.
You didn't discuss
it. Oh, abortion's illegal. We're against abortion. But what do people do? They go to England for their abortions, you know?
Well, and then didn't you all tell me that during World War II, Ireland stayed neutral?
Ireland was neutral.
In theory.
In theory, right? Because Julianne's house that we stayed in?
Yes.
Where was that?
That was Karen.
Karen. They, you know, she said her parents met.
Volunteering. At the RAF.
Her father was in the RAF and her mom was a nurse.
And I... In the war. That's not isolated. I think from Ireland fought and were part of the Allied
Probably
forces.
Probably a prudent move if you're going to be a neutral country, but your people still lean onto a certain side.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Right. I don't know if Ireland right now, I don't think they're part of NATO, but I know they're sort of allied with bunch of NATO countries.
Other cognitive dissonance moments in the book that struck you or other?
Well, the idea of looking the other way when there is a kind of abuse,
right,
and is unspoken, but the connection between the religion and the state, the government, it was very tight. It was very close. It was very patriarchal, and there was a lot of abuse going on, but nobody would discuss it.
Right. Right. Apple abuse.
It was kind of a repressed society as Ireland was growing up.
Right. And continues to grow up.
But I would say Ireland has come of age. I think they've gotten past the Fintan O'Toole's book is really a coming of, from my point of view, it's a coming of age story of a nation. First, you know, they have the older, the parents, if you will, which in this case was England. And England was, from Ireland's point of view, is kind of abusive. Not kind of, it was abusive. And so you break away from the abusive parent, but who are you? You have to figure out your identity. And the book was talking about how Ireland was struggling to figure out its relationship with sexuality and priests and all kinds of abuse.
And identity. I mean, that's where I was amazed by, like, people, massive waves of leaving the island. Like, you know, the population...
It halved.
Oh, my God. I mean, people were leaving. I mean, obviously, healing your family and, you know, my family, some parts of my family, you know, in the 1700s, people leaving. And then when there was really no jobs, people just, like, exiting the island. And then, you know, these waves of people coming back in 2000s. Like, people...
Tech boom,
huge tech boom, lots of people coming back. And
so if you have these inflows and outflows, yeah. What's the center? What's the center of the country? What's holding
it? What is this? Is this landslide?
It feels very landsliding. What's
took it down.
I think this song is from the 1100s.
Turn around.
And I saw my reflection in the snow-covered hills till the landslide took me down. Oh, in the sky, what is love? And I held in my heart what I thought.
I became aware on the way to the bathroom, the toilet, of a certain reverence in here for the king.
Oh yeah, I saw that too.
Of rock and roll.
King of rock and roll, baby.
And there's Elvis posters on the way to the bathroom too.
Right.
So there's kind of a love-hate triangle relationship with England and the United States from Ireland's point of view.
I think it's mostly a love relationship with the United States. I think the U.S. so too, loves yeah. Ireland. England is the oppressor. U.S. and Ireland have a very close connection, which I think is beautiful. You know, people love St. Patrick's Day. People love the Irish, the idea of Irishness. I mean, we were talking with Moira, the Irish woman, the other night, you know, talking about people's idea of Irishness. And I think that's that kind of, I reflect on that a lot coming here. Like, what is Ireland? What is Irishness? I mean, there's a lot of, I think, different realities swirling all the time when I'm here. Like, you know, old Ireland feels like it's gone. I mean, gone in the sense of, like, there's no, you don't see, like, the old farmers, you know, that's, I mean, it's the same in the States, but it's like there's a sense.
But that has happened in our lifetime.
Correct.
When we were little kids, the older Irish were still around.
Yes.
When we were walking on on our walkabout, I noticed, I pointed out to you guys a couple of old cars, or not too old, but you know, a car or a truck would go by, and you'd see an old guy with a
yes,
a certain type of hat,
right,
in the car,
right,
and they're all that's left now of the farmers or that type of thing, because frankly, we're in our 50s. This age bracket is running things now, right. So they're sort of out of the mainstream.
And but at the same time, like, so you have all these, like, old houses from 1,000 years ago, from 500 years ago, that are just present. They're all over the place. And people see them. It's like they're, like, U.S., we don't have that. You don't have 500, 1,000-year-old houses around. You might have a house that's, like, 100 or 150 years old. Great old Irish ballad.
With her scarves.
Right. But also you have, I mean, last night and later on, we'll probably capture some of that later on. I mean, the music, the spirit, you know, you can't, like, the spirit that remains, that's all over the place. And certainly with the music, and certainly with, it completely is part of everything, and yet there's also, like, the kind of modernization and, like, you know, people that come here, I may say American tourists that come here, you know, us included, people come and they expect or want something, and so they almost make it happen, and people will kind of fan the flames to make that kind of energy happen, you know? And
it's just straight up pride as well.
Straight up pride.
There's a lot to be proud of in the simplicity of the cows and the fields and the pubs.
I could not believe last night. I mean, and I feel the same now in this pub. It's just like the utter perfection of the moment. You know, the ease of going in and having a pint and the ordering food and the way people come up to you and ask you if you need something else, and it's not all constructed, it just is, you know.
So what you're saying to me speaks to the very essence of Ireland having come of age. What is Ireland now? Who what is Ireland? And for me, it's a kind of, they've rebelled against England. There's a kind of humbleness, a kind of openness, a kind of accessibility, a friendliness that is beautiful. But there's modernity, but there's also a strong sense of religion and history, but openness is something I find very attractive. I find just even the way people speak here, is in contrast, in England, there's a sense of, I mean, I love England. I love, I've spent many years in England. But in England, there's a kind of severe confidence in the way people speak. And here it's almost a questioning. It reminds me of Canada. It's an almost humbling way, informal way of speaking, of like, I don't know, let's have another pint and let's not worry it. It's something I find very attractive.
Well, think what our host two nights ago at our B&B, Jill?
Jill, yeah.
What she talked about, you know, at breakfast.
Jill from England.
From England.
Living here in
married
Ireland.
To an Irishman. And just, you could hear her in her sharing with us, expressing her own journey of why she's here and what it's about. And clearly it's about trying to release a certain rigidity and accept a certain openness. There's something tangible there, you know, in the Irish culture that for an English woman. Now, she said she grew up in Liverpool.
Uh-huh, right.
And so because she was in Liverpool, she was surrounded by Irish people all the time.
Right.
And that had a big influence on her capacity, I think, to appreciate Irish culture. Clearly an Irish man she married.
And she did say at the same time she was appreciated for her timeliness. This is from
when
her.
She got here, right.
Timeliness, and she was very dependable.
and this opportunities for work, because she showed up on time. You could count on her.
They knew who she was.
This is the stuff
chill.
Of building an empire.
Well, that's
like,
it.
You're showing up on time and stuff like that. And I remember
she probably
her
didn't drink a lot of whiskey.
You can't a huge amount.
You can't run a train network on we'll do it tomorrow.
But I remember her language when she said, well, I eased into the Irish. I relaxed into the Irish culture.
Yes.
And yet she retained the elements of...
Such as... I still expect the plumber to show up at 3 o'clock if he says he's coming at 3 o'clock.
Right.
And my husband says, don't worry about it. He'll be here in a couple of days.
So a happy medium would be a bit of each. But anyway.
Okay, so the other thing about religion, you said about religion, that was what really struck me is near the end of the book when he talked about where there was this cultural nationwide... like the complete drop in its trust of priesthood, religion. Like it happened, it was like a waterfall where the complete disrespect happened for the priesthood after, like, the molestation scandals. And there is something that's still embedded in people, but there's also been a huge drop off. Heelan is wiping his brow in terms of like Catholic. You can pat him on the back. It's okay. That boy grew up Catholic. In terms of the descent, the complete, like, people would, they used to go to the seminary and train to be priests, and like buildings are like empty. The churches are empty. And like the priest that was doing his mother's funeral had to apologize because they couldn't afford to put heat on for the church. You know, that's fascinating. That's a massive, like, shift in things.
So, but I would surmise that the modern world was there and ready to meet that truth of Irish people, meaning that you have a sudden... Imagine the energy that is entrapped in that social infrastructure of the priesthood, of churches, of religion in Irish culture.
Right.
All that time. And all of a sudden, due to a set of given circumstances, it explodes.
Right.
And spills out everywhere.
Right.
And suddenly, because modern life doesn't require these things... it's not actually a negative for most people.
Yeah.
So it's not as though what explodes leaves people in a dearth. it explodes and people find themselves like, oh.
Finally. Yeah, it's acknowledged. Okay.
We're okay.
Right.
We're actually good.
Right.
We still have morals. We still have character. We still have friends. We still care about being good people.
Yes.
But we're not all going to burn in hell necessarily. But all of a sudden, the hypocrisy of all of that pressure is released. And all of that is available to Irish culture.
Yes.
To totally. Advance in yes. where we go next, yes. where the culture goes next, yeah. you know?
Yeah.
I feel it. I feel
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Ireland pushed off its repressive pressure. It just blew. The top just blew. It was a very repressive society where you really couldn't say much, except you could say a lot to the priest. And so because of the corruption and because of this corrupt connection between the priesthood and the government, the power was so concentrated on the top, taking advantage of
knowing all the secrets.
Knowing all the secrets, whether that was sexual or political or business-wise, and people just said, I'm sick of it. And that's part of growing
I'm
up.
I'm mad as hell. The I'm show, not going to take it anymore.
The show, The Late Late Show. Do you remember that discussion? He talked about that show called The Late Late Show. I didn't know nothing about it.
Ireland?
In Ireland. It was called The Late. I think that actually came from Ireland, I think. But like there was this late night show, which existed for, I don't know, 30 years, 25 years. My details are going to be off, but that's okay.
And it was anti-establishment? Or
well,
what?
It was just a late night show. And this guy somehow kind of gained the pick. People watched this show a lot. And he could have conversations that no one else could have.
Oh, and he broke the taboo.
Remember that? He'd have guests on, and he'd have people on, and they'd talk about things.
This is an Irish TV show,
and he discussed it. I can't remember. Maybe you can look up on your phone the name of this guy, but he was like the Johnny Carson. They gained the traction, learned from Johnny Carson's and the American late night shows, and then they had this one, and this show allowed people to discuss things that no one else could talk about.
And because of the power of the television.
Power of the television.
It and the power of the format,
right.
It sort of weaned people off the power of the church. In a sense.
Church, and also they're just kind of like silence on things. And he could talk about things. I thought that really struck me, you know. So yeah. Deep.
In that sense, I think Ireland is very much like New York, the culture of New York, and the East Coast of the United States.
Oh, yeah?
It's an openness. It's things that were taboo are out. The cat's out of the bag.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Cat is out of the bag. Here's your Elton John.
How wonderful.
I'm being moved by the Irish lass.
Great
delivery.
Her delivery is very nice. Yeah.
Yep. Beautiful voice.
Yep.
Great delivery.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, in this bar, we're surrounded by all this sort of memorabilia. And a lot of it is American. Is it or a good percentage of it is American? Jack Daniels over here, Elvis over here, San Diego Surf School over here.
Yeah.
And then, of course, a lot is Irish.
Right.
The majority. But it's that blending. And the other bar we were in the other night that had all the dollar bills everywhere.
Right.
New York Fire Department t-shirts.
I mean, there's just undeniably a lot of.
And pride in that.
Pride,
that's
absolutely.
Our collective culture.
The people that left here didn't go to, you know, Mongolia. They went to New York.
Right.
And so there's that connection does not just die. That connection stays.
Right.
Especially if you have, beauty between the two things. I mean, the frickin', you know, the Irish, I put, you know, with this incredible music and wonderful drink. And U.S. with this wonderful appreciation rep and also wonderful music that Irish, like Billy Joel. I mean, here's the English stuff. But, you know, that connection stays. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I appreciate it a lot.
I hope you don't mind.
She means it.
Sing it. Come on.
Nice.
Woohoo!
Nice.
Gay Byrne.
And they handle
Gay Byrne.
Gay Byrne.
Was it for 37
not
years.
37
he was
years.
He was like Letterman or whatever. Johnny,
oh,
Johnny Carson.
That's a different person than the one. Than
not
the Gay
Talese.
Gay Talese was a writer.
That's right. Someone else.
Right. Gay that's, Byrne. That's
Gay
right.
Gay Byrne is Irish.
I see. Okay. If you look, it's person. Fascinating. You know, you talk about looking at Johnny Carson old videos
yeah,
on
yeah,
YouTube.
Yeah.
If you look at Gay Byrne. Late show on Ireland, in Ireland, 37 years of episodes.
Oh, I'd love to check that out. And what he did was he took all these topics that were entirely taboo, and he would just ask questions and people would talk. And the format was such that you're now allowed to talk.
Right.
Because it's TV. What are you going to do? And everything was just another story. That's how the show was formatted.
But he used the fact that it was TV and that somehow that was so magical that he could get away with it. So he would discuss things that you're not allowed to discuss between people. Just think about the impact that had on people.
What it did was it stripped away gradually the power of that church hierarchy.
Right.
1,000 million, you know, 1,000 people at a time.
Right.
Until the hierarchy just crumbled.
Right. Right.
It may be too much food, but
powder your chowder?
No. Snouder your louder.
Powder your bowder.
Mr. Peach would powder his louder. And what was Trump's friend, Mr. Nowder?
Mr. Nowder?
Mr. Nowder.
Did he have an outer?
No, it was an innie.
Innie. Skinny. Is he skinny?
It was a skinny innie. He had a bump when he worked for Mr. Trump.
Mr. Schlump?
But, I like Trump as president because it teaches us what not to do. As Republicans and as Democrats and as independents.
It's important.
And as humans.
Right. So it's kind of like a reverse psychology.
It's so educational. But that's only for those who value democracy. I don't. I think it's silly. I like a good autocracy. Where words could be twisted to mean anything.
There's a great sign in toward near the bathroom that says, save water, drink beer. Simple.
Whoa.
To the point.
Mm.
If we were to talk more about the book, there's one thing that I find fascinating that I can't quite get my head around.
Well, I'm so happy to see you.
Me too. And that is, how do you go from a nation of 8 million people, about, and 80 years later, you have half that.
Half that.
Half that. Like 8 to 4. 8 million to 4.
And where
four
are they at now?
5, maybe?
5.
Is that right? 5 million people?
I have no idea.
And maybe 7
8
or 8 million,
million they had
cows.
In the 1800s?
They have more cows than they do people.
Oh, yeah.
Are we
oh, they have more cows than people.
Oh, yeah.
Only 5 million people in this country?
I think there's 5 million people in Ireland.
Come on, somebody Google that. So, but hold on. So, in the late 1800s, there was 8 million people?
Yes, I believe that's the case.
And then people, like, fled during the famine?
In 1841, there were 8 million.
8 million in 1841.
And in 1931, due to famine, diaspora, there were 4 million.
4 million. Crazy. Half the population left.
And they went to England. They went to the United States. They
went to the U.S.
A lot went to the U.S. and they went to other, but they went to Canada, no doubt. Most probably went to the U.S.
A lot went to the U.S.
And the people went to the U.S. I grew up with those people. Those
correct.
Seriously.
Current population is?
It's coming.
Okay. Five million.
In this huge area. In this, think about that. England has how many? Like 70 million?
70?
It's England's a little bit bigger, but...
Maybe not 70.
Oh, yeah? You don't think so. I'm including Wales and Scotland.
Okay. Oh, ooh. In trouble.
Okay, now, a couple of technicalities.
Yeah.
So, the population of Ireland is 5 million
humans.
0.033. Two other adjustments. What is the population of Ireland, including Northern Ireland?
Oh, okay, yeah.
So it doesn't include the whole island.
Uh-huh.
And then, what's the Irish population in the world? I'm working on those.
Oh, that's...
Oh,
I'm
working, that's 25 million.
Working on those.
That's big.
Those are worth knowing, yeah?
Am I not correct in saying that Northern Ireland is not part of... Ireland, the country.
It's not part of Ireland, the country.
It's not.
Actually, back to the book, I thought that was fascinating. I learned a lot about that. That there was like, where people were fighting for that, and there were soldiers fighting for that in terms of like, I mean, that whole thing in the prisons where they had people doing the fasting. Fasting. That was fascinating.
Fasting?
These like...
They were just sort of like what Gandhi did.
What do you call that?
Where you starve yourself.
Starvation diet.
And those people became heroes, and they were kind of equated with Jesus. Fascinating. I knew nothing about that stuff.
And that also, the other flip side of that protest, that pushing back, there's a lot of violence. IRA.
Boom. Right? I love this tune. Support for the like protest against like England having a foothold, and then it went over the deep end.
It went too far.
Where like they bombed a dog show or something. You remember that?
They were indiscriminately killing children,
right?
Old women,
and all
older
of a sudden people were like, "Wait, whoa!" And I think eventually, I mean, like everything else. I mean, Greg, we talk about this. Like things. The political or the kind of the societal wrangling end up kind of pushing things to a point of like, okay, just acceptance. Like people, then I think the Finn O'Toole kind of says like people like generally, just like there's just an acceptance. It's like, look, we're not gonna like expel people from the island. That's not realistic anymore. That was never realistic. And so, so people, you know, there's an acceptance of Northern Ireland. And obviously, it's always going to have this kind of strange, you know, with Brexit, where it's like, wait, what do we do now? What are we going to do? Build a wall? No. So it's going to have to kind of exist in this weird space where it's Europe. Ireland is Europe, and Northern Ireland is part of, yeah.
It is weird, and if you look at the planet, assume we're discussing Earth now this podcast. Earth is filled with carved up weird stuff.
Right.
This is one of them.
In the Caribbean, there are several islands that function that way, where you have Dominica, which is half Dominican Republic, half Haiti.
Yeah.
Two completely different planets.
Completely different planets, right.
So, check this out. Back to population for a moment.
Yes.
In 1970, there were 3 million people in Ireland.
Shut up.
3 million.
Shut up.
Okay. So now there's 5. Guess when there was 4. If in 1970, there were 3 million people, when did we reach 4 million people?
1990.
2005.
Cool. Wow.
But just proportionally, you know, that extra million, it took 70, 80, 90, 100, it took 35 years to get a million. And now 2005 to now, it's in 20 years we get another million.
Mm.
Just interesting.
Wow.
As we walk, the three of us, all around Ireland.
Nice.
I think we're seeing that largely, except for Dublin town and a little bit of Galway and a little bit of Tralee and so forth, and Shannon, the place is empty.
Oh, absolutely.
Compared to the U.S.
Compared to the U.S., yeah. I mean, the towns are...
It's 26,000 square miles, 64% of which of the population is urban.
64% is urban.
What's the median age? Take guesses. Median age.
Median age.
37.
What do you think? Median. What does median mean? Average age of the Irish
population.
Wow.
What's the average age?
45.
It's 38.
38.
Damn, I was. You were close.
Off
you
by
win.
One.
You win.
I hate when I'm off like that. Learning.
Fascinating, right? So it has been steadily increasing.
Population.
Yeah, it's only moving in one direction.
Well,
there's an industrial base, there's the tech boom. It's a good place for American tech companies to set up shop.
Okay, how about this? Population forecast.
All right, so this is very interesting. The population forecast is pretty modest, actually, showing that by 2050,
which is in quite some time,
is 5,700,000.
That's it?
That's it.
It's 5 million now.
Correct. I think that's intriguing that it's pretty modest.
With modest?
It's modest growth.
It's flat.
What is the life expectancy in Ireland?
82.
Perfect, on the nose.
Yes, what happens is the Guinness has the ability to sort of pickle somebody. So...
Go ahead.
If we're looking for another entree to the book.
To what?
To the book. One idea is Ireland's draw toward modernity. They were sort of behind the other European countries and the US and England. And they were
Ireland is one of the pigs.
Right.
And they
Portugal,
wanted,
Ireland, Greece, and Spain, right?
They wanted modernity. They wanted televisions, they wanted electricity, they wanted the internet, they want...
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Beautiful, we will.
You know, they looked at JFK.
It's like the ghost. Kind of... Ooh, lovely, look at that. Do you have what you need?
Who looks at JFK?
Ireland.
Is this Irish butter? I just wonder, is this Irish butter?
JFK. They looked at, in Ireland, back in the day, they looked at JFK as
this modern, beautiful,
Irish. That part in the book?
Yeah.
When JFK visited, have you seen the picture of JFK riding through, where is it?
He's a conqueror riding back.
And he's driving through Ireland in the open, you know, you can't help but think about his assassination later, but he's driving through in his open car through the street of, I don't remember the city.
And they're going bonkers, right?
Oh my God, there's people and there's thousands of people on both sides and he's driving through. It's beautiful. And it's kind of, it's a parallel to the Pope's visit in what, 78, 79? When people were like, oh my God, the Pope is here. 250,000 people appearing for the mass that he did, you know?
What fucking awesome. And I think what JFK represented to the people of Ireland is modernity. Oh. Sort of materially successful, beautiful.
And the American president who was Irish, you know?
Right.
That was Catholic.
Right. By the way, we want to be like him.
just by the way, the only Catholic president ever.
Kennedy? Is the only Irish Catholic?
No.
What about Joe Biden?
Oh, all right, so he's second.
Biden.
Joe is Catholic, you're right. He's the second Catholic president.
No, the
besides that?
Thank you so much.
This food is so good. Thank you very much.
Really, second night here. Incredible.
Thank you. Enjoy.
All right, reach out.
Supreme Court in the U.S. has a bunch of Catholics.
It does.
Has a bunch of what?
Catholics.
On the Supreme Court.
Oh, my God. It's dominated by Catholics.
They make the decisions.
I just find it fascinating.
Very conservative.
There was concern about Kennedy being Catholic and what's that going to do to the whatever Protestant side of the U.S. But then the Supreme Court, you know, how many Catholics are in the Supreme Court?
There's a lot.
Five? Four? Five? There's a bunch.
Alito and...
I find that fascinating.
When I was a kid, my dad had several very close friends and business associates who were from Ireland and ran pubs in Manhattan.
Is that right?
In Midtown. The Pig and Whistle.
Pig and Whistle?
The Pig and Whistle and the Fiddler's Green.
The Fiddler's Green, it was called?
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I didn't know you had that association with that song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Fiddler's Green was in Rockefeller Center.
Your dad had a friend in Rockefeller Center with Fiddler, with a...
He became business. He was very good friends with them, and eventually they owned a condo with one couple of that Irish business partnership.
Where?
Owned a condo with my parents in Amagansett, out where we camped near Montauk.
They had a condo out there?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What I remember from childhood, though, is that they did several business deals with my dad, but I remember from them is that they dealt only in cash.
Right.
Since they ran a pub in Manhattan.
Oh, my God. They only dealt in cash.
And my dad, when we were kids, did a big real estate deal with them. He said, hey, everyone, kids, come here. I want you to check this out. And he opened a briefcase, and it was, $100,000 in cash.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And he spread it out on the bed, and we rolled around in it.
No. Your dad did that?
Well, he didn't, but we did. My brother and I rolled
around in the cash.
It was $100,000 in cash.
Stop it.
They did their real estate deal in cash.
So that pretty much it was unreportable to the IRS? Is that
well, it had it been. My dad was too much of a Boy Scout, so he put it on the bank and did it all above board, terrified that something like that would happen. But they, of course, were doing a cash transaction because they were flush with cash running a bar in Manhattan.
Oh,
and I remember
God.
One of the guys, he drove a Bentley, which is a handmade car. You know, and at the time, this is in the 80s, the car was $120,000.
Handmade.
Handmade. Bentleys are handmade, yeah.
Oh, my God.
But Irish pub. I imagine my father became friends with them drinking in their pub. Knowing my dad.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Art of the Deal. He probably developed those relationships out of being a regular, especially during lunches in Manhattan, right near his building, you know, in the 70s.
Look at that groove. Look at that groove right there.
Run, 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 run
Nice transition.
Making fun of the French here. Mark, did you know that? Mr. Peace.
He didn't. No, seriously.
Mr. Peace.
No, don't tell me that he
didn't. No, he did. I'm sorry.
When? What time?
It was
exactly
the
Seder.
What time? It was the Seder.
It was the Seder? Like the Passover Seder?
No.
He was here? Are you a decider?
It was Ralph Nader at the
right.
Seder.
Yeah, right.
With the cider.
Tomato?
With the tomato?
Potato.
Was it the tomato in the red room with the gefilte fish?
Yes, and the psycho killer who said, give me some more of that cider.
He said, give me more of that Jimmy Page. What did you just say?
Jimmy Page said, give me more of the babysitter.
This is a children's show. You can't say that.
The Coca-Cola ad with the girl from
I'm not Jimmy Page. That's Jimmy Page.
Right, that's his thing.
I think Greg just turned the page.
Not on. On.
You sound like you're from Flushing.
On the stage.
Are you on that? Oh my God.
Like the awning.
Well, that's the interesting thing about all things peach. You know, this cider is made of 17 apples, but if you feed them to a capybara, it poops out fertilizer for the peach tree.
I don't think that's true, and here's why. Each time you have a capybara drinking that, excreting the thing you just said, that has nothing to do with the cows that burp 5 times more than a car emits carbon emissions.
Wait, that's true though. A car emits five times what a cow emits two
not
times.
Mitt, not Mitt Romney. Emits. Words matter, Eric. Maring.
A cow emits
Eric,
more than a car, Maring, basically.
Five times in 1 year. Averaging it out.
In farts.
Whoops, I meant burps.
Farts.
We're not, this is a family show.
Right.
And there's no farting. I mean, no burping. I mean.
Mr. Peach is talking to the musicians who just played.
Yes.
And they said, I can tell, look out. Is that Mrs. Peach?
Peach is in Ireland this week.
With the cider. With the cloak and dagger.
Right, which is where we're staying overnight, the cloak and dagger. Well, what I was going to say was it has to do with language.
Yes.
And what I was going to say is if we, the three hikers here across the world of Ireland.
Walkers.
We're walkers and we're on the road that says walkers on the road.
Yeah.
If we were to publish a glossary of that in our society, which we can and cannot say, and how words shift and how words don't shift, and how the shifty shift and how the shifty shift shift.
Yes.
My question is, what were we talking about?
All right, I got it.
You got it.
I got one of the entries.
Eric, it's fine.
For your glossary.
Greg is good.
I have one of the entries for the glossary. All right, I'll say the entry for glossary. I'll play a game, a drinking game.
All right.
I play an entry for glossary. I tell you an entry for glossary, and you give the definition. And anytime someone gets shot out, glossary entry.
No.
And, all right.
Got it. Understood.
Johns Hopkins.
Trouble.
University. No, what is it? Non-men.
A capybara got my tongue.
A capybara's got your tongue.
I live in the age of political correctness, so I can't speak words that have language associated to
words
the
don't mean it. Words have no meaning.
Words have no
literally,
meaning.
Literally, what I'm saying, you
we
don't understand what I'm saying right now.
Postmodern, decadent.
Well, that's the meaning to you. That's not what it means to me.
It means that to you?
How do you get it? It's not a beautiful. It's not a painting.
It's not on YouTube.
It's not on YouTube and it's not a painting. It's gone. But gone in
not, it's in us.
That's what I mean. It's not, that's what music is. Is music is memories, creates memories and feeling, and we talk about it. But it's not like grandmother's paintings on the wall. Something else. The auditory thing, experience of music is something that is like in your heart and your ears and you know, people that you share with. You see, remember we saw that woman singing that and then she finished with Psycho Killer? Like,
she finished with Psycho Killer?
Yeah. I think I'm pretty much a double whiskey person now.
You see what I'm saying?
I'm a double whiskey person. A single whiskey is like a fucking like whisper. Like give me a statement.
That
and then
works.
I'm happy.
Like for me the double, I feel good. Like that's
like good.
I think this is my seventh drink. We had one outside. We had another Bulmer's inside.
Mark Laxer.
Then we had a tap.
Your then cider is still in the works. I'm just telling you.
Then what did we have after? Then we had the tap. Then we had another Bulmer's. Then we had double whiskey.
Yeah,
and
double
we're
whiskey.
Having a Guinness. This is eight.
Tell me, Mr. Peach, do you have any more statements about the book that we read? I mean, because now that we're on to actual Irish music, anything about Fintan O'Toole's book?
I think one thing I can say about it is...
What? I can't hear you because there's Irish music in the background.
Meow.
Speak up.
Meow.
Capybara.
Meow.
Banjo player's playing.
I think the most... One of the most amazing things about the book, other than understanding more about Irish history...
Yeah.
And culture is that this book is freaking really well written.
Amazing writing. And anyone
it's amazing writing.
Anyone I mention Fintan O'Toole to, Irish people, they say, oh, he's incredible. Oh, he's amazing.
And not only that, on a personal level, people say, oh, what a lovely man. So it may be that he's a lovely writer.
He's speaking to people.
He's getting through to people. He speaks eloquently, passionately. He is going through so many dimensions about culture and class and history and power and corruption.
One thing, you know, how about something we didn't discuss was like the Virgin Marys that people thought were like speaking, that were like moving and
oh, the Virgin Mary. Yeah.
Statues that were like blinking and smiling at people, and you had like 10,000 people showing up to these little towns to see the Virgin statues. You know, it's like
what era? 70s?
82.
Early 80s?
And people saw things.
Right.
This is like a Fatima type thing?
Like a tortilla in Mexico where Jesus shows up in a tortilla?
No.
That kind of thing. I don't know.
More like Fatima.
What is Fatima?
Fatima is when these three kids saw
Mary show up and
speak to them. And,
that. And yeah. I'm not saying, I'm not actually in any way belittling in any way, shape, or form.
But it was on a mass level.
A lot of people
and the whole
saw
town,
this.
And then people start coming into the village and the town. And,
they were saying, O'Toole quotes, like, they were like, oh my God, the sight of like all of the... whatever, fish and chips, burger wrappers, after all those 10,000 people showed up was something to behold. Like, all of this, like,
detritus, all of this, you know, after all these people came to see the Virgin was also fascinating, you know? So, but I thought that was, like, I knew nothing about that. It was very interesting to think about all of these people, like, seeing the Virgin smiling or blinking at them or whatever, you know? And it's...
blinking.
And a lot of people saw it, you know? A lot of people saw it. What is this? Healing a jig or a reel? Count the notes. Count the notes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
What is it?
Right, jig.
It's a jig. What did he da 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 da? It's a jig. You did it. You got it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Count twos and threes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, not that identifying with words is so important, but it is like help does help. Like
it's a branch, right?
It does help understand the branch.
The jig or the reel.
The Mark Laxer, who read this book multiple times, is on his feet. Are you just standing, or are you indicating you need to, like, leave the pub?
Ready to whisper something inappropriate into this
meh.
What did you think of that?
Meh.
What did you think about the fact that our waitress said meh?
Meh. She didn't say meh.
Meh. That's Edison's word. You know, isn't that cultural appropriation?
Total cultural of appropriation. She's like, meh. If I'm at a place where they're not paying attention to me, she said.
It's like meh.
She agreed. She's getting, what is she getting? 14 euros an hour. And she,
14.
And they're taking care of all the tables. Nobody's section is being threatened by you.
Collectively managing this entire place. That is unbelievable. Now, what that tells me as an old waiter is that everyone is collectively scanning the tables visually and using
visual cues. Oh, get those glasses. Oh, do they need food? Things look done.
This is interesting. We don't have this in the States. We don't have a number
not
screwed
on your table.
Onto the
screwed
table.
On.
You know?
Right.
So in summary, the discussion about We Don't Know Ourselves by Fintan O'Toole, I would say, after having read this book some number of times and now in discussing it with you two guys.
And Mr. Peach.
And Mr. Peach, what I would say for me is I feel much more, having read the book and understanding Ireland more deeply, I feel a deeper connection with the people here. And I almost
feel... And the cows, don't forget.
And I almost feel that in some ways, Ireland is a microcosm of the U.S. in that Ireland broke away from the power and came of age and is struggling with religion and power and corruption on such a deep level. And that's the story of my country, the United States of America.
I'm with you, though I will say, as a counterbalance, U.S. doesn't have an immigration issue. Like, whereas Ireland is at immigration throughout, since the 1800s, has had people leaving. So far...
We have an immigration issue.
We have an immigration issue.
We have
people coming. Right. Right now we have an immigration issue where, you know... The choice architects, those in power, don't quite know what to do. But we don't have people fleeing.
Absolutely. That's one place where my metaphor does not hold up. I totally agree with that.
Like, we don't...
But in other dimensions, there's a lot of parallels between religion and corruption and government and coming of age and trying to understand... who we are.
I'm going to continue to be your devil or your dark side, because I think in the United States, religion has been surging. I think the, what do you call
surgeon
it?
Surgeon like a doctor?
It's like a doctor. I think the, what do you call them? The
evangelicals
have been surging. People have been like, oh yes, all of this stuff, oh yes. Be it the end times or the Jesus energy. I think Ireland, as I understand it, has pretty much been like, all right, fuck all that.
Having said that, just to be the devil's advocate,
yeah,
I would say in the United States, despite the evangelical surgeon, what I would say is the United States has lost religion. It's happening. Your friend PRRI,
yes.
The public,
yes,
uh-huh. Public, something, something,
yeah,
something.
PRRI.
There's numbers about the young people, and they're not buying it. Over time, we're going to be coming a secular country with tens of millions of exceptions. But overall, the meta pattern is, I'm not gonna take it. I never did and never will.
But how many evangelicals are there in our country? 30%?
The number's decreasing.
Decreasing?
Yes.
For sure.
Amongst the young.
It's fascinating though, isn't it? It's like really, it's like, you know, in terms of Ireland, like, how many evangelicals in Ireland are there?
12.
There are 12,
and most of them are in Dublin town.
And 12 evangelicals.
One for each day of the week.
Right.
Do capybaras have priests?
And with that question, that open-ended question from our dear friend Greg Heelan, who we are traveling with, and the honor is all of ours, we sign off and say sayonara.
But that's because the band is about to start.
Oh.
Here they go.
We should hear them begin. It would be cool.
You ready? They're discussing. They're talking
to the sound. De,
saying,
toi.
With un, deux, trois. Cat. And cat sank.
Six, did the cat really
sept,
sank?
Huit.
Neuf. Dix.
Dix.
Onze.
Here they go.
So you're speaking French in an Irish bar?
We are. You got,
ein, zwei. Wait a minute.
Oh, wait, we're doing Hindi. Ek, do, teen, cha,
do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
Yes, here she goes.
There you go.
Thank you.